You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
What is up, universe? Jose Youngs from MMAfighting.com back in your life for the A-Side live chat. Now, I know normally you're used to Sean and Mark and even Luke from years past, but as you know, lately we've been kind of changing things up where since I've taken over, we've been rotating a co-host. We had Alex K. Lee, my first show. We had Casey Lydon, my cameraman, last week, but for this week, we've decided to do something special. He's been hounding me to get on this show. UFC bantamweight Brian Kelleher joins me. Brian, how are you?
Boom. What's up, guys? Excited to be on this the A-Side live chat. First time, but let's do it, man.
Yeah, I'm real excited to have an actual UFC fighter. I know we get a lot of comments saying we wish we could get some more breakdowns from someone who's actually stepped into the octagon. So I've listened to your comments, and Well, I know Brian's going to kill it. Hopefully I do well, too. But without further ado, let's go to the questions. And as always, you can hit the hashtag, the A-Side on Twitter, if you want us to answer your questions. You can go to the actual post on the page and leave your question there. The questions in green will be prioritized, obviously. So if you see a question you like or you want answered, give it a thumbs up or whatever it is on the site. I can't honestly remember. And we'll get to it. But, Brian, first question. Bellator, actually, two title fights and way more. And I'm going to read this verbatim from our friend LFMWA. Bro, this card is stacked, bro. Coker is not messing around. It's Coker season. The Kyoji Horiguchi is fighting Darren Caldwell in a rematch for a fight that happened in Ryzen. This time, Kyoji is leaving to come fight Darren on his turf. Oh, and by the way, this is a cross-promotional champ versus champ as the main card opener. Dylan Danis is in the co-main. Enough said. I don't know if that's true. Lyoto Machida and Chael Sonnen, main event. That's also not true. Bro, three rounds of aging 205 legends. Chael's been building this fight since 2011. Seriously, go back and look up all the stuff you said about Lyoto Machida. 205 is weak. He led a karate champion, the champ, blah, blah, blah. Aaron Pico was on the prelims. He'll be looking to bounce back, get a solid win. Same with Heather Hardy. Eduardo Dantas is fighting a number one contenders fight. He'll look to get a win, a lineup with Caldwell. So there is literally no question in anything I just read. But Brian, I'll give you the floor for a minute. Obviously, you're not in Bellator, but this is a pretty stacked card. A lot of people say this is the biggest card in Bellator history. Bantamweight title fight, champ versus champ. You are a bantamweight. I don't know how much you pay attention. You are also a Bellator vet, so I don't know how much you pay attention nowadays, but thoughts on this massive Bellator 222 card in Madison Square Garden?
Yeah, this is a really big card. Coker's doing the right things. You know, a lot of exciting matchups on the card with, you know, we got veterans of the game, and we also got a lot of up-and-coming prospects, too, highlighted on this card. Caldwell versus Horiguchi is a rematch. They fought in Ryzen. And, you know, Caldwell was doing well in the beginning of that fight, but he ended up losing by choke. So I think this is a big spot for him to get a rematch, get redemption. I think it's really cool that they're doing this cross-promotion stuff. You don't really see this much elsewhere. So Coker's doing things different, and really excited to see how this card plays out. We got Chael Sonnen, who likes to talk, obviously, and you know, we got a really exciting card coming ahead.
Now I want to ask you something specifically. A lot's been made on the first Ryzen fight between Caldwell and Horiguchi was in a ring, And this fight is going to be in a cage. I don't know how much you've trained in either one or if there is a big difference, but Caldwell said that it will play a factor. This is his home turf. Ryzen obviously uses like former Pride format with the ring as opposed to the cage. Is that going to play a factor now that Horiguchi is coming over to America, but this rematch is going to be in a cage?
Yeah, there's multiple factors. I've sparred in a boxing ring before. It's definitely a bit different than the cage. The cage leaves you a little bit more room to move laterally side to side and kind of avoid stuff if you want. So for a guy that likes to move a lot more, that could benefit him. And for a guy that likes to pressure fight and cut the cage off or cut the ring off, it could be a disadvantage. I think obviously Caldwell mentioned a few things about traveling to Japan and the weight cut and how that played a factor. And I think now Horiguchi might have to deal with similar things, although he was a flyweight, so it's probably not as big of a cut for him. But we could see a different style going on in a cage, but Horiguchi has a lot of experience in a cage, so I don't think that that'll be a big deal for him.
And not mentioned anywhere in this comment is the actual main event between Rory McDonald and Neiman Gracie for the welterweight championship. And the winner will move on and face Lima in the finale of that welterweight Grand Prix. I do want to ask you, what do you make of Grand Prix? Are you a fan of these tournament file, these tournaments that the Bellator is running? And as we're recording this, I read that John Fitch is actually on site preparing to be a potential standby. I know he fought to a draw. Rory McDonald, I guess, didn't work out over it in the open workouts. But what do you make of this main event and the Grand Prix as a whole?
Yeah, I think it's a great idea to have Fitch, obviously, just in case something goes wrong. But the Grand Prix is great. It's something different. Like, I was saying about Coker earlier, he does things a little different, spices things up. I think it keeps the MMA exciting and Bellator as something different than the UFC and other promotions. And the Grand Prix is cool. Sometimes I don't like how they split it up too far away and you kind of have to deal with timing issues where if a guy has an injury or whatnot. But overall, it brings a little bit more light and interest to the game, in my opinion.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you that it definitely brings interest. And luckily, this welterweight Grand Prix has basically worked out where it's essentially 1 year tournament where it started in the fall of like 2018. It's going to end in the fall of 2019. There were questions of Rory McDonald having a quick turnaround. I know he fought John Fitch to a draw in those post-fight comments where he was like, oh, I don't know if I have it in me to hurt a man. It was pretty alarming. And then he had to fight a few months later. So that was a little interesting. But I guess it's worked out to an extent. Fingers crossed that everyone stays healthy and Rory McDonald shows up to fight. But we're going to move on to the next question. Jumping over to the UFC, I'm sure we're going to get a lot of questions about this. Cowboy from our friend Rob Holland. Cowboy may have taken a beating, but he was not beaten. I had the fight 1-1 going into the third, and yes, Tony Ferguson did the most damage in total, but immediately after the fight, people were writing off Cowboy saying this was his last run at a title. I beg to differ. Dad Cerrone is a thing, IMO. Your thoughts, please. So, Brian, I'm sure you've watched. I'm sure everybody watched. Donald Cowboy Cerrone fought Tony Ferguson not on the main event and not on the co-main event. That's a whole nother story. He fought on the main card UFC 238. People are calling this the people's main event, which if there's any fight in the world that can be called the people's main event, it is that. Tony Ferguson actually told me in media day that Dana White called him to quote unquote save this card, and Donald Cerrone was like, "Yeah, that sounds good to me."
Of course.
For two rounds, this one is exactly as everyone thought. One of one of the most exciting fights we've seen in a while. And especially a three-round fight, Cowboy and Tony Ferguson went to war. But then Donald Cerrone made, and I just said this on the post-fight show, rookie move where he blew his nose to try and clear out the blood with a broken nose, and his eyes swelled up because he had this big air pocket in his eye. Doctors declared he couldn't go into the third and final round. So they gave Tony the TKO win, second straight TKO win to be waved off between rounds. Also, because he also beat Anthony Pettis in his last fight with a broken hand. Thoughts when you're watching this? I know Dana White said there's no way Donald Cerrone should have been allowed to go out there. He agreed the doctors made the right move. Thoughts on it being 1-1 and just your thoughts on this fight as a whole and how it played out?
Yeah, man. I think the first original thought for me was I wish this was a 5-round fight. I think everyone could say that, you know. I don't know who that would have favored, to be honest, because I've always thought Cowboy Cerrone was a slow starter. So I figured 5 rounds could benefit him because it takes him time to get into a rhythm. But in this fight, it was different. Cerrone seemed to come out sharp. You know, he did really well in the first round. I think he won that first round. And then maybe the second round was a little bit closer, and we give it to Ferguson. The momentum started to switch, and Ferguson started to take over. And then, you know, we saw Cerrone blow his nose in between rounds, and the eye blows up, and the doctors call the fight. What an unfortunate, you know, circumstance. We all wanted to see that fight finish and play out, but I don't think it's fair to write off Cerrone now just because, you know, he loses by TKO due to doctor stoppage. I think the fight was very competitive. Who knows what would have happened in the third round? I thought, you know, the momentum was shifting, but I definitely saw a Cerrone that has had fire in him still to compete and still try to win that fight.
100%, and he was actually pretty upset that he was, like, trying to call, like, hey, don't stop the fight, don't stop the fight. I don't know how well he would have done with one eye. I know, yeah. But I said this octagon side, the same thing happened to Eddie Alvarez when he fought Gilbert Melendez in Mexico, and he was allowed to continue fighting, and he ended up winning. It was a very slow, kind of grinded-out decision. Cowboy Cerrone is not going to fight like that.
No.
There's obviously a difference in styles between Tony Ferguson and Gilbert Melendez. Tony Ferguson, I think that there was a picture, there was like a collage of like his last every opponent he's fought on this win streak, and every single one is just covered in blood at the end. So definitely, in my opinion, the interest for Donald Cerrone. And has that ever happened to you? Have you ever blown your eye up like that after breaking your eye?
Actually, recently, in one of my fights, I didn't really have like a broken nose or anything too bad, didn't take much damage, but I guess I got hit in the nose, and I went to blow my nose, and I felt that exact thing happening. A little pocket right here started to swell. Luckily, I didn't blow my nose hard enough to like blow it up where my eyes shut, but it definitely caused like a big, you know, a big pocket, and it started to swell up a little bit. So it's a really uncomfortable feeling, and you just don't really know what you could do. Ice it, whatever, but it takes time for it to go down. So I ultimately think it was the right call as far as safety goes.
100%, and I have never experienced that, and I hope I never do experience that. Yeah. But I like what you said about how you wish this was a 5-round fight. Donald Cerrone was very adamant that he wished it was 5 rounds because he himself said before he fought Ali Aquinta that he felt terrible making the walk to the octagon, like he just wasn't in it. And then you saw Ali Aquinta won that first round, and then Cowboy Cerrone did what Cowboy Cerrone does, got better and better and better as the fight went on. There's obviously less time to do that in a 3-round fight. You can't feel bad in 1 round and then you only have 2 rounds to make it up. So Donald Cerrone was very adamant that he wanted this to be 5 rounds. Tony Ferguson obviously wanted 5 rounds, but Donald Cerrone doesn't do that great against southpaws. Tony Ferguson said that he would be down to run it back. If you're Tony Ferguson, if you're in his shoes and you're upset at how it played out, would you take that fight, or are you just like, hey, I have the longest win streak in lightweight history, give me that title fight?
Yeah, to me, it's like it can go both ways. It's like if Dana White's calling Tony and saying, hey, listen, we don't want to run it back. You know, you deserve the next shot. You've done enough. You have the most wins, you know, the biggest win streak in the division right now. Then I'm like, hey, I'm going to sit out and take that title fight next, you know. But I don't know if that's going to be the case. I feel like Tony Ferguson definitely felt really upset with how that played out. Just as a true fighter, you know, he didn't want to win that way. He wants to win definitively. So I feel like that could lure him back into a rematch if that's what the UFC wants to do. I really feel for Cowboy Cerrone in this scenario too, because, you know, coming back down to 155, he has his baby, he has all this motivation now, and he's looked better than ever, and he loses in that kind of fashion without actually really losing the fight, you know, altogether. It's a crazy situation. I'd like to see the rematch just for those reasons.
Yeah, no, I would like to see the rematch just because that's, like, I'll watch those two spar. Like, take the title contention out, take everything out. Like, that's just an extremely high-level martial arts fight. But crazy fact, the last time Tony Ferguson lost, women weren't even in the UFC. Like, Ronda Rousey hadn't even made her debut. Like, so, and then I saw Justin Gaethje said that he wanted to fight him on Twitter. And, like, I like that fight in terms of, like, excitement. But, like, imagine a world where Tony Ferguson has to go through Justin Gaethje to get another title shot. Like, that's crazy to me. Am I crazy?
No, not crazy at all. I mean, who isn't excited to see that fight? But still, it's like what such an unfortunate timing circumstance for Ferguson in many different aspects, like tripping over the wire, you know, the situation with Khabib and not getting that fight fulfilled. And now people calling him out like Gaethje and having to have to go through that again to try to get a title. It's amazing to see a guy with such a reign not ever get his chance to for the real title yet.
Yeah, 100%. I agree. I mean, I'll watch Tony Ferguson fight anyone, but
Yeah.
he needs a title fight, man. And he had that interim. He was carrying the interim belts around all week. He himself said, "If Cowboy beat me, I'm handing him my title." So
Yeah.
we could talk about Tony Ferguson for an hour, but we're gonna move on. All right, sticking on that same card, we're actually going to jump up to the main event. Is Cejudo the new Woodley from our friend Milo of Croton? I hope I pronounced that right. Hey guys, Cejudo won me over with his performance this weekend. Immediately after, he started calling out guys with quote unquote names in the bantamweight division, completely ignoring the guys in line for a title shot. When Tyron Woodley did this, he immediately turned fans against him and struggled with his popularity. Question: Is Cejudo at risk of turning fans against him by calling for money fights instead of establishing himself with multiple title defenses after des against deserving contenders? Thanks. Hashtag free Pizza Carroll, and that's a nod to my coworker Pizza Carroll, who's actually in London for the 242 press conference. But
Shout out to Petey.
Shout out to Pizza. I'm sure he'll be on the comment section. Absolutely loves him. But Brian, if you remember when Tyron Woodley knocked out Robbie Lawler to claim the welterweight championship, he immediately called out Nick Diaz and George St. Pierre. Got a lot of flack for it, saying you just won. It was essentially he beat Kelvin Gastelum, I believe, in January. That was the card of Anderson Silva versus Nick Diaz, I believe, was that same card, or Cormier, John Jones. They were both in that same month. I can't quite remember. And then he waited a while, waited for the title fight. Yes, the Johnny Hendricks fight kind of fell off when they were supposed to fight that one time, but he waited, got the title fight, immediately called for big fights without ever defending his belt. Fans rapidly turned on him, and he did
Yeah.
eventually. It was a slow build, but I think he got it back, especially I feel like with that win over Darren Till, he won a lot of fans back because then at the end he was like, I'll just fight whoever. I mean, like, I asked for the money fights I didn't get, I'll fight whoever. So, Brian, as a fellow fighter, if you're in the bantamweight division, which you are, and you see your champion, two division weight champion, now calling for Uriah Faber, who hasn't fought in a few years, Cody Garbrandt, back-to-back knockout losses, and Dominic Cruz, who hasn't fought since he lost to Cody Garbrandt at UFC 207, which was also Ronda Rousey's last fight card. So as a bantamweight, what do you make of these comments?
Yeah, I mean, I don't hate on it too much because I understand the game, you know, being in the game. What happens is you're taking fight after fight against any opponent to just get to this position of power. And once these guys get to this position of power, they're like, okay, now I could start calling out money fights, calling out big names. And even if it doesn't happen, you get responses from these people, you get more notoriety, you get more opportunity. The UFC is going to do what they're going to do. They're going to pitch an offer on what they want. Who it really affects the most right now, I feel, is Aljamain Sterling, who won that fight in a beautiful way against Pedro Munhoz. You know, for him not to get a title fight and have to hear these things, I think he's probably the most frustrated guy out there. Never mind the fans. I feel like the fans, they could hate you, they could love you. It's all good. You know, the king of cringe is getting a lot of attention these days. So, you know, I think for Aljamain Sterling, though, that's a tough situation to hear him not say his name and might get, you know, passed up and get you know, have Dominic Cruz pass him up potentially coming back from injury. So I understand it. It's not fair necessarily, but that's what champions do. They try to call out for the big names.
And what you didn't even mention is Joseph Benavidez has a win over Henry Cejudo at flyweight. I mean, that was Henry Cejudo's last loss. If Joseph Benavidez is obviously going to rematch Jussie Formiga later this month, and if he wins, he's got to be the most annoyed if Henry Cejudo A doesn't ever drop back down to flyweight, and he's like, hey, I beat you once, like, come avenge your loss. I mean, like, I consider George St. Pierre the greatest fighter ever, and he's avenged all of his losses, like, to the Matt Serras and the Matt Hughes of the world. I would like to see that fight. I think Joseph Benavidez or Aljamain Sterling, if Joseph Benavidez wins, is those
Yeah.
two, 1A, 1B. Either one are the most deserving. But I'm not a fighter. I like watching high-level martial arts. Uriah Faber was the weirder one for me because he's been retired and he hasn't even had his return fight yet. He already has it booked
Yeah.
with Ricky Simon in Sacramento. Who knows? Because Ricky Simon is not an easy fight,
No, not at all.
especially for coming off a long layoff. Dominic Cruz has had every surgery in the book. Cody, I can get, but he's coming off two pretty violent knockouts, and then the guy that knocked him out, Aljamain Sterling, just beat. So if you're Henry Cejudo, does having two belts, and I don't know if you heard this, he also has a gold medal. I think he said that once or twice.
Yeah, no, I wasn't too sure, but
Triple C, as he called him, does having the two belts make it? Obviously, makes a big difference because now he can hold up two weight classes, but he's like, hey, pay me. Yeah. Tyron Woodley only had one championship. Does that make a bigger? So the question is, Henry Cejudo, could he become the next Tyron Woodley, or does the two belts make the bigger difference?
I honestly don't think – I think he's winning over Dana White. I think Dana White really likes the guy. He understands what he's doing with his shtick, and he's bringing a lot of attention. And also, having two titles in two different divisions, nobody wants two divisions held up and a lot of confusion going on. So he's going to have to defend whatever one the UFC prefers. Obviously, Dana came out and said the flyweights are supposedly sticking around due to this now, so which the division's not that deep anymore because they cut like half of them out. So I'm wondering what they're going to do there, maybe restructure it or whatnot. But Henry did mention that he enjoys fighting at 135 more and that he likes the fact that he doesn't have to cut that extra 10 pounds. So that might favor him to defend the 135 title before the flyweight title. So, Joseph Benavidez, if he gets a win, he might be waiting even longer to try to get that shot.
What do you make of Henry Cejudo's, as you said, stick, the Kryn Cejudo? As a bantamweight, you are – I mean, you're a UFC fighter. You're a prize fighter. You're going to want to fight the guy that draws the most attention, maybe not, like, the biggest – like, he's a little bit of an anomaly where he is the champion and he's doing this, so it'd be different, like, if you're fighting, like, Chael Sonnen. He's not the champion, but he's going to draw the biggest – the most eyes. What do you make of the Kryn Cejudo gimmick?
Yeah, I think it's smart, actually. You know, at first it was like kind of annoying. I'm like, I don't know. This guy's being a little fake. This isn't really Henry Cejudo, you know. Then you hear like he took some advice from Chael Sonnen and stuff like that. But he seems to be comfortable doing it, and he seems to have fun and stuff like that. And I think now that I understand, like, it's just straight sarcasm and he's just having a fun time, I get it. You know, you're trying to get more fan base, more attention, more money. That's what we all want, you know, like you said, prize fighters. So I get that. But coming up, it's different because you're going to get paid the same no matter what, you know, unless you start to fight a big superstar, you take that guy's name and you get all that notoriety. That's essentially what you're fighting for. It's not like because you fight a big name, you get paid what he gets paid. It's never like that until you're a world champion and then you get paid different money. But yeah, I think Henry knows what he's doing. He's getting people to hate him. He's getting people to love him and just drawing all the attention.
What do you make of, like, yeah, he's doing this gimmick, but in media day, he's kind of pulling back the curtain where he's like, this is me selling a fight. And if you talk to Chael Sonnen on or off camera, he's going to be the same way no matter what. He doesn't, quote unquote, for wrestling fans, he doesn't break kayfabe. He doesn't pull the curtain back. So what do you make of Henry Cejudo kind of saying like, hey guys, like, this is just me selling a fight?
Yeah, that's just him being himself, being honest. I guess, you know, Chael Sonnen will keep he'll keep that attitude the whole way through. But Cejudo is like in an interview, he's kind of real, you know, he's just a normal guy, humble, whatever. He says, you know, funny things, but I think he's just really confident. I think he knows what he's done. He deserves it. He's Olympic world champion. Now nobody could deny the guy. He's won two titles in two different weight classes and beat, you know, some of the top guys in the world. So, you know, he knows what he's done and that he deserves what he's asking for. So he's just doing it in a funny way and being honest about it.
And one final one on Cejudo before we move on. He declared himself the greatest combat athlete of all time. Two UFC championships, Olympic gold medal. Do you agree? Or are you on Dana White's side where he's like, I mean, there's a guy named John Jones floating around out there. Yeah. There's boxers out there. There's actual like amateur wrestlers going for – because he has a gold medal, but there's guys going for multiple gold medals. What do you make of that comment?
It's tough, man. I find it to be like a controversial subject because you don't know with different sports. Like you said, how do you gauge the different sports on levels of, you know, what's superior to the other one? How do you gauge competition, you know, people fighting now versus people fighting back in the day? Obviously, the game has evolved, so you're probably seeing the best fighters ever now compete. But, you know, then you got John Jones, who's beat everybody in his way, essentially, and fought probably the top top competition there is to fight, and defended his title multiple times over and over. I think that could play a role. You know, Henry hasn't defended his titles yet. Yes, he won a gold medal. Very impressive, but he just won these titles. They always say it's hard to get there, but it's harder to stay there. And John Jones did that for a while.
Well, to say I agree with you would be an understatement. You hit it on the head. He hasn't defended his title yet. If he defends both titles, 125 and 135, I mean, it's going to be hard to argue that, especially if he avenges that loss to Joseph Benavidez. But moving on, Valentina Shevchenko's head kick from hell by Jay, our longtime friend Jay DeLuca. All right, this is a long one, so I'll kind of condense it. Hi, Jose and Brian. Valentina's masterful, oh my gosh, she used a word that I'm not even going to try and pronounce. Masterful head kick and overall performance not only showcases how immensely superior her skills are within women's MMA, it has also conveyed an ugly reminder of how no competitors within her thin weight class of 125 will even come close to matching her skill level. It can be argued that she is certainly on par with how dominant Amanda Nunes is, with many believing that she did in fact defeat Nunes in their second outing. Luke Thomas said that Valentina is a cyborg from the year 3100 sent back in time to murder us. How would you both rate her flawless head kick in comparison to other famous head kick finishes in MMA? And do you believe that her only option is to chase Nunes for a third fight in order to actually challenge herself? Jermaine Durand also comes to mind as genuine competition. So before I'll kick it to you, Valentina, I actually asked Valentina like if she what her goals were, like does she want a third fight with Amanda Nunes at 135, because a lot of people, including herself, believe she won that second fight. Her goal is to defend her flyweight title as long as possible, as many times as possible, because she said the 125-pound division is the future of women's MMA. But, Brian, your thoughts on the head kick? Was it the most violent you've seen? I mean, obviously, looking into the past, there's been a whole lot of them. But when you're watching that fight and you see Valentina Shevchenko basically wrap a baseball bat around Jessica Eye's head, and then it was a pretty terrifying – I don't know how it came off on camera, but Octagon side, it was horrifying. So your thoughts?
Well, yeah, I was horrified back home watching that. I was like, man, Jessica Eye was out for a pretty while, you know, pretty long time, and that was scary because usually guys – people come back quicker than that. And I'm like, you know, I hope she was okay. But that head kick, man, that was loud. That was really impressive how she set it up too. She was going to the body, and then Jessica, I was lowering the hands a little bit, trying to protect the body. And then she goes up top with like barely any, you know, you couldn't see her show any of that. There was like no sign of her going up high. She throws kicks very fast, very highly skilled with all those Muay Thai fights she's had. So yeah, there's not many girls that I see challenging her in the division, which I guess is smart on her side to just stick to 125 and defend that title. She'll probably go on a long reign as far as, you know, competition to face there. But that was one of the most impressive head kicks I've seen, especially from the women's side. From the men's side, as of recent, I would say Alexander Rakic against Jimmy Manoa. That was beast.
Yeah, and all week we were saying, like, Valentina Shevchenko, this is among the media, is most likely going to have a long reign. She's obviously anything can happen, but what she's shown, she's been pretty dominant. She ran through Joanna Jędrzejczyk. She obviously put Jessica through a buzzsaw. But she wasn't the star that we thought she deserved to be in the eyes of fans. Maybe it's because she's fought on co-main events for so long, and she wasn't active for a while, not because of herself, the whole Nico Montano falling out. She took her a while to get back, and then she fell off the card like literally days before their fight, and then she had to wait a while, and then when she finally got the title, I feel like fans really lost an opportunity to see her shine. And then a lot of people in the back compared this to when Anderson Silva front kicked Vitor Belfort, where if you people don't remember, Anderson Silva was great, but he wasn't a megastar. And then he front kicks Vitor Belfort, and he is all of a sudden the biggest star in the UFC. Is this the performance that Valentina Shevchenko needed to cement herself as a legitimate superstar in the UFC?
It's definitely going to help her case. I'll say that. I mean, you don't see knockouts like that much within the women's division. So that is a big shock to, I think, people around the world watching in its own. And I think that's going to help her star power for sure. I think we need a little bit more from her. We need to see a little bit more of a challenge, and then we can gauge that more. And I think that's what the fans would want to see, more of a heroic challenge for her. Like people are saying, challenge Amanda Nunes again. And maybe if she could do that to someone like Nunes, now we're talking like superstar.
100%. And Jay DeLuca also adds, on a side note, personal top three head kick KO finishes in MMA. Uriah Hall versus Adam Sella. That was on Tough. That was the, I'm sorry, Adam. That was a pretty scary scene. Gabriel Gonzaga, Crow Cock and Crow Cop. And then, wow, yeah. Blast from the past. Marius Aramskis versus Jason Hyde. Man, I haven't thought about that knockout in a long time. I think that was in Dream or Pride. I'm not honestly 100%, but that was when Jason Hyde got head kicked, and then it was like a 1-2 on his way down, and then hit his head on the rope on the way down. Oh, that'll be pretty horrifying. So, Brian, most memorable head kick knockout that comes to mind. Maybe it's from one of your teammates or when you watched, or most memorable one.
The guy already kind of listed it, the one with Gonzaga, Crow Cop. The reason why is because he Crow Cop. No one expected that. And the way that Crow Cop landed with his leg like underneath himself with his ankle twisted, that was just nasty to watch, man. And that was a big shock to see. So I would say that one. But like I mentioned before, as of recent, Rakic, the way he set up that head kick knockout and how Manuwa slammed his head back on the canvas, that was brutal. And he set it up with a nice uppercut, and then the head kick came right behind. That's one that I can remember right now clear.
Yeah, that one is obviously fresh in fans' mind. The Uriah Hall one was real scary, especially because, like, in Tough, there's no crowd. So doesn't really drown out. So when he got knocked out, it's just like a handful of people in the gym. You can hear Adam Sella, like, breathing heavy, and you can hear how quiet it is. But that one was horrifying to watch. But I'd say that one's up there, the Lyoto Machida crane front kick that knocked Randy Couture into retirement, sent his tooth fly, which funny enough, Chael Sonnen has brought up multiple times on this promo tour, because him and Randy Couture obviously teammates and former training partners. So, quote unquote, going for revenge. But moving on from our another one from Jay DeLuca, a promoter's ego catching up to him. Hi, Jose and Brian. Anthony Joshua's major upset of a loss showcased how one of the top three heavyweight boxers in the world can not only fall from grace but also collapse his chances of earning those lucrative fights of his lifetime with either Deontay Wilder or Tyson Fury, the three kingpins of heavyweight. Although either of these fights still certainly exist, the appeal and allure of them has taken Jay DeLuca's vocabulary is on another level. I'm not even talking about that word again. Man, oh man, he is using like every long syllable word in the dictionary. Anyway,
he's well read.
Yeah, love to hear your take. Man, this guy is killing me with these words. Basically,
look at all those books behind you.
I know, man. These are all comic books. No one wants this. Yeah. Granted, two dissimilar combat sports, however, I'm sure we can all agree that most MMA fans do not think twice about how lucky they are that we got to see the best truly fight the best, especially in the prime of their careers with a single promotion. Few exceptions with DJ, Rory, and Musasi. Love to hear your takes on the bind against boxing MMA. So I assume he's asking, like, how fortunate are MMA fans that we actually get to see the best fight the best, as opposed to boxing, where, like, how long did it take us to finally see Manny Pacquiao versus Floyd Mayweather? I mean, if that fight happened in 2009, I think that's it obviously is the most bought pay-per-view ever. But in 2009, that's a high-level boxing match. Manny Pacquiao is still running through the division. Floyd Mayweather is obviously still undefeated. But 2009, I feel like it's a bigger deal in the terms of competition rather than making money. So as MMA fans, how fortunate are we that we get to see the best fight the best on a frequent basis?
Oh, yeah, it's very important, you know, especially from the hardcore fans and from fighters themselves. They want to see the best fight the best, and we want to fight the best. That's why we get into this sport. You know, obviously we want to make money, but deep down inside, we want to know that we could be the best. So we want to fight the best possible guy out there. Who's the champion? Who's on the top? Who has the most wins? But in boxing, it seems to be corrupt. Or promoters can't come to an agreement where, you know, their top guy is not going to fight this top guy. And it's unfortunate because people are only in their prime for so long, and we want to see in guys' primes that we want to see them fight, and that's not always the case. Sometimes these promoters wait too late to make the matchups, and then it's no longer the same scenario and no longer has the same heat behind it. But yeah, I wish boxing would step up in that aspect, and we would see the Joshuas, the Tyson Furies, the Wilders all kind of mix it up and everyone fight while they're in the top of their game. So yeah, we're lucky as MMA fans and fighters to have that as a part of the game right now.
I agree with you 100%. The only – I will play devil's advocate. though, and we never got to see Anderson Silva fight George St. Pierre, which was to me, is one of the biggest missed opportunities in UFC history, where there was a time when they had both cleaned out the division at welterweight and middleweight, and if they had just met in the middle, or if George had jumped up to 185 like he did against Michael Bisping later on, proven that he could be a high-quality fighter. But that just stands out in my mind as, like don't do the boxing thing. Just fight each other. You guys are clearly
Set. I mean, it still happens in MMA. It just happens less and you know, not as obvious, not as more frequent, but it still does happen. I feel like as far as promotion goes in general, there's fighters that are being protected due to potential star power in the future. They want to give them the right matchups. I think they do this with Sean O'Malley a little bit, and now we're seeing him fight Chito Vera. I believe this is his first real test against a guy who can potentially beat him.
Well, that's a perfect segue. We actually have a comment about that fight. So if you want to expand on that, like Sugar Sean, obviously he dealt with the USADA tainted supplement thing. Now he's being able to fight. I believe his last fight was UFC, I want to say 222, which was Max versus – no, it was supposed to be Max and Frankie, and then it ended up being Cyborg Prunaskaya, and Frankie ended up getting knocked out by Brian Ortega. But Sugar Sean – big test in front of him, but again, International Fight Week, another big card. Your thoughts on this matchup in your division, correct? Bantamweight?
Yeah, bantamweight.
Yeah, he's not a featherweight. So thoughts on the Sugar Show and his chances against Chito Vera?
It's an intriguing fight. I like to see that they're giving him a test finally. Not to say anyone he's fought isn't a good fighter. It's just, you know, certain styles and stuff like that. Guys who can't really match up to a striking, guys who don't have the wrestling jiu-jitsu to just take him out. You know, he's shown a little bit of weakness in his wrestling and jiu-jitsu game. I know he seems to be working on that a lot, though, trying to improve. And Chito Vera, man, he's on a hot streak right now. He's looked better than ever as of late. And he looks more aggressive. And Sugar Sean's been out for a while, so you never know how that plays a role. But he's still really young. So I see Chito Vera being able to try to utilize takedowns and catch a submission, because that's probably where he's going to have the biggest advantage.
As a bantamweight, when you see Sugar Sean doing, like, he's getting this big promotional push, he's not doing the cringy Cejudo thing, but he is a unique figure to just – you see him walking down the street, he immediately catches your attention with his giant hair, his big sunglasses. Do you like when you see that, like bringing eyeballs to your division?
Yeah, I think it's good for all the fighters. You know, I think he's definitely someone being targeted. You see a lot of guys calling him out for a reason, you know, because they know too, like, okay, this is someone who the UFC is backing. This is someone who they want to see win. They want to see grow and become a star for them. So for us, the rest of the division, we're like, I want to fight that guy, because if I beat that guy, now I say, listen, UFC, I'm the guy. I just took your guy out. I'm the guy now. Get behind me and let's start building me now. So I think that's what fighters are looking for. I think it only brings more attention, more eyes to the division.
Yeah, I agree with you. Obviously, I'm not a UFC fighter, but I don't mind. I don't hate anyone getting the big push. I mean, Sage Northcutt got that big push. And I remember the Kevin Lees of the world were calling for a chance to fight him in any interview he got. And obviously the UFC did not want Kevin Lee to fight Sage Northcutt that early in Sage Northcutt's career. And then Sage Northcutt used that big push to get a huge payday and won championship. Obviously that first fight was a little rough for him, but he got paid. He said he got that money. So I'll never fault a guy for that. But moving on. Michelle Waterson from Rob Holland. Andrade's next challenger is announced, and even though it's a fine fight, do you think that was the main reason Dana dismissed Waterson as the next contender, or is there something else since he was so firm in rejecting her claim? Wiley Zhang is going to fight Jessica Andrade. It's been reported that she'll fight her on an ESPN Plus card in China. Obviously, nothing is 100% official, but supposedly that's what the UFC is targeting. I believe Wiley Zhang is ranked one above Michelle Waterson. Michelle Waterson has been calling for that title fight ever since her last win over Karolina Kowalkiewicz. What do you make of this booking? I know Tatiana Suarez just won. People consider her the uncrowned champion at strawweight, but she had a pretty bad neck injury flare-up in that first round. She's not upset that she got passed over because it lets her get healthy. Obviously, as a fighter, you'd rather be 100%, especially when you're fighting for a championship against, as she calls herself, Jessica Andrade calls herself, a tractor inside the octagon that's just going to run you over. for five rounds. He just knocked out Rose Namajunas. So what do you make of the matchup? Does Michelle Waterson, was she overlooked, or what do you make of this whole situation that played out?
Yeah, I like the matchup. I think Weili Zhang has a lot of potential right now, and she's an aggressive fighter. You know, I think a lot of times the UFC is looking at who's more impressive in their last performance to book title fights. You know, obviously you said Tatiana's dealing with the neck injury. She didn't have the most amazing performance in her last fight. She did win. She's fairly dominant, but she's a wrestler, and she likes to take you down and kind of hold you down, a little bit of ground and pound. Sometimes the UFC looks at stuff like that and they say, well, we don't want to see that as much. We want to see some vicious striking going on here. We want to see knockouts. We want to see aggression. So Weili Zhang has that, and I think they're trying to build the market in China as well. I think that's a factor. So I like the matchup. I'm excited to see how she fares against Andrade.
Yeah, I would have liked any Tatiana, Michelle, or Weili Zhang. Like, throw a dart at a dartboard, and whatever one hits, that's who she's fighting. Like, I'll watch any of those guys. But Weili Zhang is a very interesting matchup. I don't know this for sure, but she seems to be one of the few fighters that will be able to match Andrade's, like, physical strength. Like, she bullies got people inside that octagon. Like, she did that against Tisha Torres, who's one of the smaller fighters. Our cameraman Casey Lydon has been hammering that Michelle Waterson for title fight, Michelle Waterson for title fight for forever. Like, he's like, Tatiana is great, Michelle Waterson should fight first, and then Tatiana can fight the winner. But I think you hit it right on the head when you said the UFC is trying to break into that marketplace over in China. But I will present you with this. If you're a champion and the UFC comes to you and they want you to fight your next contender in their backyard, similar to what Rose did with Andrade, do you take that, or are you being like, hey, man, like, why can't I fight? Like, I just fought in Brazil, but like, I'll fight. Why do I have to go to her enemy territory as the new champion?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's definitely something to be said. I think it's up to her manager, really. The manager has to step in and say, listen, you know, we're the champion, we want this, and that's where the negotiations start. As fighters, especially Brazilian fighters, I've noticed they just do not care. They'll fight anybody, anywhere. Lineker's another guy that's like that, who I fought. He'll come to, you know, your backyard and fight you. He'll fight guys unranked that are way behind him. He doesn't care to take those risks. So I think sometimes that's just a fighter's heart, and that's how maybe Andrade is looking at it. Like, listen, I'm the champion. I should be able to beat any challenger, right, if I'm a real champion. So maybe she's looking at it like that. She's willing to take on all challenges, including fighting in a different country in someone's backyard.
Yeah, and I don't know. Obviously, the time difference might be a big thing. If it's on ESPN Plus and it streams, it'll start pretty early over here in America. So maybe that might play a factor. Like, hey, if I want the most eyeballs on me, maybe I shouldn't fight. I don't doubt for a second that Jessica Andrade wouldn't take that fight. But maybe, like you said, her manager's like, hey, we want to build our brand. Like, maybe we shouldn't fight at like 4 a.m. in America. But
yeah, I agree. That's the manager, though. You know, he's got to step up and say that, you know, negotiate those things.
Yeah, correct. And well, sticking in the strawweight division, Carolina Kovalevich's sad, sad statement, dude, from our friend Ted Bear, one word, dude, I appreciate her sincerity, but talk about a buzzkill. Has the game really passed her by, or can she change, say, by switching camps? Where could she best shore up her weaknesses? ATT, Jackson's, the UFC PI, your thoughts. So obviously, I hate talking about fighters' retirement and telling people to change camps, because I'm not a fighter or a manager, so I hate doing that. But she did say, like, maybe she isn't the best. This was her on Instagram. Maybe she won't fight the top contenders anymore, but she still wants to keep fighting, and she still wants to put on great shows. So, Brian, as a fellow fighter, when you see a former contender fall a few times, like she lost Michelle Waterson, got knocked out bad by Andrade, and then comes up short to Alexa Grasso. Like, outside of the knockout to Andrade, Michelle Waterson and Carolina Kovalevich, good fight, so she's not being blown away. What do you make of her situation? And people, as a fighter, and someone's like, hey, man, you should change camps to help your stand-up, what do you make of fan thing?
Yeah, I mean, as a fan, it's different, you know, but for the fighter herself, that's really up to her how she feels inside of her heart, you know, with fighting. I've noticed, though, that she is a little bit less aggressive. She doesn't pull the trigger as much in her fights as of late. Maybe that could have something to do with the knockout loss. That sometimes is detrimental to your psyche, you know, when you go in there, you're worried about that happening again, and that plays a big role in how you fight and how you perform. But as far as moving camps goes, I think it could be a help. Depending on the kind of attention she's getting, I guess she's training in Poland, right?
I believe so. She's had this coach for a very long time.
Yeah, and loyalty is a big thing in this game to some fighters. They want to stay loyal to the person that brought them up in the first place. And, you know, to leave someone's not easy. But as a coach, sometimes you got to be the one to say, hey, listen, I think what's best for you is to get out there and, get, you know, see different training partners and see different aspects of coaches and try to improve your game. Maybe going to a big gym with more better training partners can help her. But overall, it could be something that's just internal, that's just inside her head where – you know, she took a bad knockout loss and has to get her mindset back in there and get a big win again.
And one more for me, this wasn't asked, but I'm genuinely curious. How much of a factor when deciding camps do the training partners play? I mean, we heard John Fitch forever when he was at AKA saying, like, the fact that he would get to train with, like, prime Josh Koscheck, prime Mike Swick, like, these guys that are his size that are the most elite athletes in the world that he gets trained with side by side every day. So, like, yes, the head coach is important, but how important are finding those training partners to push you inside the gym?
Oh, it's very important. And it's not just a preparation thing too for physical training, but for mental training. You go into a fight knowing I'm doing really well in the gym with this person. This person's done amazing with his career. You know, I'm sparring with this person. This person's on top of his game. He's in his prime. I think those things carry into the fight with you, and it can be extremely important. Sometimes, you know, you find yourself, you know, some guys had a fight recently and they're injured and they're out, and now your main training partner is not with you alongside in your camp. It's just a timing thing, how it works. And now you're scrambling around for, you know, good training partners to get you prepared for a fight. So I think that having a lot of high level guys around you that are in your weight class is a big thing for preparation.
I mean, worked out for Daniel Cormier and Cain Velasquez. They were training partners forever, and they're arguably the two of the greatest heavyweights of all time. But one final question from the site before we jump to Twitter, and I would like to get your thoughts on this specifically, Brian. The next UFC card, I don't remember where it is, nor do I care. I literally don't give an F for any of the fights. Is this the worst UFC event in the history so far? Now, the next, I don't know which one he's talking about. Maybe he's talking about pay-per-views. If he's talking about pay-per-views, that is baffling to me, because the next pay-per-view is the John Jones, Santos, Nunes, Holm, Askren, Masvidal, Sugar Sean's on that one. Like, that card is insane. But if you're talking about specifically the next card, that's UFC Greenville. The main event is the Korean Zombie versus Hanato and Moicano. I don't know any fight that Korean Zombie's in that's not exciting. And then the co-main event is actually a guy you brought up, you fought before, John Lineker's rematching Rob Font in the co-main event, taking that fight on short notice. So what do you make of that card and this fan saying, is this the worst card in UFC history?
I wouldn't go that far as to say it's the worst. I feel like fans are just looking for, you know, something to hate on these days. It's crazy. You know, I love fighting. I love watching fights, and I don't care necessarily on what the name is or what the guy's ranking is. Sometimes you see the best fights in the world when they're, you know, the early prelims, you know, on the ESPN Plus or whatever, Fight Pass. Guys are just out there hating right now. I don't know what's going on, but I think Korean Zombie, like you said, one of the most exciting fighters in the whole UFC. He's fighting Moicano, who's another exciting fighter. Both probably going to strike the whole fight. Lineker, he's a knockout artist who throws bombs, another exciting fighter. I don't know. Maybe they just look at the whole card and they want to see stacked fight after stacked fight. But, yeah, man, I'm looking forward to this next card.
This card is like, it doesn't have the biggest star names on, like, big names on it, but it's not a bad card. I mean, Luis Pena is on the prelim card. He's fighting Matt Wyman, who hasn't fought in a long time. He's a long time UFC fan. Dan Ige is on the prelims. Darren Wynn and Adriana Lipsky are both on the prelims too. Like, there's a lot of important fights for, like, the future of the division, but not the biggest names on the card. But even, I believe it was you, like you said it yourself, like, some of the prelim fights steal the show. I want to say it was UFC 199. That was when Michael Bisping knocked out Luke Rockhold. Dominic Cruz finished up the trilogy with Faber. Brian Ortega knocked out Guida. Dustin Poirier knocked out Bobby Green. Like, Dan Anderson knocked out Hector Lombard. Like, that's one of the most violent fight cards I've seen in a long time. And the fight of the night was Polo Reyes versus, I can't remember, Dong Young Ma, maybe? And that was fight of the night. And that one fight of the night, it was the most exciting fight on that insane card. So I think you hit it right on the head that just because you're fighting first doesn't mean you're in a bad spot.
Right. Yeah, you can't judge a book by its cover, man. Anything could happen in these fight cards.
100%. Now, we're going to hop over to Twitter. Obviously, you can use the hashtag, hashtag the A-side if you want. I assume you're going to want Brian to answer your questions, but I'll try. All right, from PhilD1984 on Twitter. While one's weight rules are somewhat praised to produce a healthier sport, how come Eddie Alvarez and Mighty Mouse fight noticeably bigger opponents? Do one's fighters know something they don't, or is the system just screwed, which is indicated by lack of transparency? We've actually had some question like this. This comes up frequently. Like, yes, ONE Championship has said, like, we've solved the issue with weight cutting and weighing in and fighting at your healthier weight. But we don't get to see all the weigh-ins throughout the week. We don't know the situation. I mean, Eddie Alvarez's opponent, he got knocked out. Sage Northcutt fought a guy that I don't think that he was that much bigger, but people were visibly upset that he fought a guy that we didn't get to see weigh-in. So as a fighter, when you hear ONE Championship saying, hey, we solved the weight cutting rules, Eddie Alvarez has to fight at 170, Demetrius Johnson has to fight at 135. What do you make of what ONE Championship is doing over there with their weight cutting?
Yeah, I mean, from afar, it seems like, oh, wow, they're solving the issue, you know. But then you hear through the grapevines that, you know, I didn't see my opponent weigh in. I don't really even know what happened. And these are coming from the fighters at the fight card. So something skeptical is going on. And I find it weird that they're not showing it to the public, what's going on with the weigh-ins. And, I feel like for them, it just makes more room for skepticism. They should probably come out and expose what they're doing and show that they're actually, you know, helping weight cutting in the sport instead of hiding things and it being up, you know, for people to talk about and discuss and not know really what's going on.
Yeah, it's a weird one for sure. I mean, for all we know, when Eddie Alvarez goes up to 170 and fights a quote-unquote like lightweight, as ONE Championship calls them, like, for all we know, that guy's cutting from 190 to 170. Yeah. I'm going to tell UFC fighters doing so. It'd be like Eddie Alvarez jumping up and weight and fighting Tyron Woodley or Ben Askren. He's obviously going to be a smaller guy. It's weird, though. It's real interesting. Eddie Alvarez obviously has his next opponent lined up. Do you think that plays a factor in guys, like, going forward? Fighters might be less inclined to try ONE Championship if there is something fishy with their weight cutting system.
Yes and no. Money talks, right? If you're going to pay me if you're going to pay me some big money, I don't really care who I fight. I'll fight someone bigger than me. It doesn't matter. That's how I'm looking at it. But, you know, as far as fair fights go, it could be something to talk about. I really don't – I don't like to see that that's a potential thing going on. But, if you're getting paid and you're going in there and you don't know, there's no way to prove it that they're doing something sketchy. It's really like, what can you do about it? But, we'll see what happens with that.
100%. And I'm going to peruse one more time. I'm sure we got a lot of the questions on Twitter we got on the post, too. A lot of questions on Tony Ferguson. Tony Ferguson throughout the whole fight week. Hi, guys. Is it just me, or was this the most, quote-unquote, normal Tony we've seen in a while throughout fight week? He seemed to be doing very well, and his post-fight press conference made much more sense than I expected. I noticed even other people saying that this is the best interview so far. Could it be that he was having some issues longer than just these past months, and then he has finally gotten the help he needs, and now is doing much better? Also, do you agree he now deserves the next 3 title shots, and what thoughts do you have about him? We kind of talked about that. P.S. Yes, I'm a huge Tony fanboy. P.S.S. Tony Ferguson is the type of guy to make Henry Cejudo look like a silver medalist. That is funny. But I do want about yes, quote unquote, normal. I don't know what Tony's situation is, but all week, I saw this from a lot of a lot. And some media members could take it, some couldn't. Someone would go and be like, Tony, how are you doing, like, mentally, physically and stuff? Because you saw a lot of, like, Tony had a lot of family issues become public. And he would be like, don't effing worry about it. Like, next question. Like, and yeah. He said fans would come up to him, like, and be like, how, they seemed like, how are you doing, Tony? Like, are you okay? And he's like, don't effing worry about it. So, and he said in the media day when we asked him, like, fans don't care. They're just looking for drama. They're just looking for whatever. As a fighter, if you're going through something like that, are you on Tony's side where, like, fans don't care? They just want drama. They just want something to nitpick and point out, or when a fan would come up to you, would you genuinely be like, oh, thanks, man, I'm doing great?
Yeah, you know, if someone comes up to me, takes the time to ask me, I'm just going to be open and honest. That's just who I am. You know, I'm not going to be have an attitude with a stranger for no reason. But Tony's always had that. He's always had, like, a chip on his shoulder, and he's had, like, a real, like, harsh attitude style with the media. I don't know where that came from or if that's just who he is. But, yeah, to me, he seemed happier than usual. Leading up to this whole fight week, I felt like in his interviews he was like a little bit nicer, a little bit less on edge and stuff like that. But who knows if he was trying to be that way just to kind of say, like, everything's okay with me. We don't know, you know, what goes on behind closed doors, how he is in his personal life and how he is behind the cameras and stuff like that. But yeah, someone comes up to me and they seem genuine and they're asking me how things are doing. That's nice and all, but, you know, it is also weird to get personal with strangers too, you know.
I can't even imagine, especially when you're getting ready, like, because this is all fight week. Like, he's getting ready to step into a cage and fight Donald Cerrone, and people are bringing up his family situation. So I can't even imagine. But for Tony, I don't know if you remember, after he fought Anthony Pettis, he kind of broke down inside the octagon. Like, he was crying, like loudly crying. So who knows what his situation is. But we're going to move on. I think we're coming up on time. I don't see any questions. And as usual, the A-side live chat tradition, we're going to give both of us, but Brian obviously can take as much time as he wants, cut a little promo on any topic you want, fight-related, life-related, whatever. So, Brian, the floor is yours.
For me, I this is new to me. I've never done this promo stuff, but I will say that I'm looking to make a transition at some point after fighting to start doing stuff like this. I'm very passionate about the sport, and I really don't see myself doing anything else but being a part of fighting and MMA. And I love what you guys do as media, and I love the interviewing fighters and the journalism and the interviews, breaking down fights and stuff like that. I would love to do that after fighting. So this is pretty much me trying to build my resume. So I just want to say thank you for having me on the live chat. And, you know, I did the MMA beat. And so I'm just trying to say, where do I fill out a application with MMA fighting?
If it was up to me, you'd be a regular, my man. But this was this was absolutely awesome. I think if you killed it, obviously. I enjoy having fighter. I enjoy having a fighter on to kind of pull the curtain back for, like, yes. As media members, we are around fighters a lot, but I've never fought John Lineker inside of an octagon. I've never fought inside of an octagon. So I very much enjoyed the insight. But for my promo, I'm going to say Tony Ferguson should not fight anybody not named Dustin Poirier or Khabib Nurmagomedov, which I'm surprised we didn't get any questions on. Brian, if you want to talk about that press conference after, we can. You kind of called it the you didn't have many nice things to say about it on Twitter, but Tony Ferguson shouldn't fight anybody not named those two. Yes, Justin Gaethje is an awesome fight. Yes, the Cowboy rematch is awesome. There's a lot of fun fighters out there, but like I said, the last time Tony Ferguson lost, women weren't even in the UFC. So, I can't even think about if the UFC makes him versus Justin Gaethje, my head might explode. But Brian, thoughts on the press conference that you said was, what'd you call it, the most boring press conference?
Yeah. I don't want to be like a hater out there, but I'm just calling it how I see it, man. I miss the McGregor Diaz days, you know, when those two were going at it. I just get excited to see these press conferences. I want to see a little bit of something, dialogue, go back and forth. But I do want to give props to the fact that they're both two just very respectful fighters and humble guys. And I do appreciate that side of things before anyone gets it twisted. But yeah, it was just boring, you know, like there was nothing, no excitement, no exchange, nothing.
Yeah, it was a little – it seemed like they hadn't woken up yet. Like, Dustin just got off the plane. But me personally, like, I really enjoyed the lead up to Max versus Dustin, where it was like, yo, Irish drawn out rivalry with Connor. But – and even he himself – what? He said that he even had difficulty kind of motivating himself for this. But outside of Dustin Poirier is a bad dude.
Oh, yeah, he definitely is someone to watch out for, man. I think he has a big chance in this fight, you know. We'll see how he deals with Khabib's wrestling, but Khabib has shown that he can get caught on the feet. You know, he's been hit on the feet plenty of times. So Poirier's got nasty boxing. He showed a lot of power. I was so impressed with how he put Max Holloway away, how he won that fight. It's interesting to hear Khabib say that he had trouble getting excited and getting up for this fight. I don't think that's a good sign, but I think ultimately when it comes to fight time, Khabib will be Khabib, you know.
And the last question I'll ask you before we wrap this is, I asked Casey Lydon, our cameraman, last week, and he was like, he needed more time to think about it. If Dustin Poirier becomes the one in 27-1 to snap Khabib Nurmagomedov's win streak, he will have beaten Anthony Pettis, Eddie Alvarez. We fought Eddie Alvarez to a no contest, then avenged it. Finishes Anthony Pettis, finishes Eddie Alvarez, finishes Justin Gaethje. Also fights Jim Miller to a fight of the night. Beats Max Holloway in one of the best title fights ever. If he dethrones Khabib Nurmagomedov, is this the greatest stretch of victories in UFC history?
It could very well be, man. The guy has shown that he could beat the top guys in the division, especially like coming from losses and then bouncing back. That's a bigger story to me, you know, losing to Eddie Alvarez and having to deal with that situation and then coming back and doing what he's done since then. It's nothing short of amazing. I mean, he's beaten the top guys and he's beaten them in good, exciting fashion too. He's getting better and better every time he gets out there. I feel like back, you know, maybe four or five fights ago, I'd be like, Is this the guy to beat Khabib? No way. But now I'm you know, slowly fading towards, I think, you know, this could be the guy.
Yeah, but like Casey said, he has to do the hardest thing first, and that's actually beat Khabib Nurmagomedov. And if he does win, I think I would want to see how – if he finishes Khabib, I mean, it's hard to argue. But, like, John Jones's run in 2011 with, like, Bader, Shogun, Machida, Rampage, Rashad, like, that stretch of fights, that's way up there. Shogun's – Grand Prix run in 2005 where he won that light heavyweight Grand Prix. That was uber impressive too. But if Dustin Poirier just goes out there and melts Khabib Nurmagomedov, like, I can't argue.
It's kind of like the way that he beats him. If he beats him, that'll make a statement. But like you said, John Jones, like the way he's beaten guys, it's been very impressive what he's done in his career. So hard to say.
Yeah, I just want to watch that fight. That's all I want to do.
I can't wait, man.
Can September get here any sooner? But we're going to wrap up the A side. This is Jose Youngs. That's Brian Boom Kelleher, UFC Bantamweight. I absolutely loved having you on, Brian. I am very confident you'll be back down the road. I know fans have been calling for Pete Carroll, so maybe he'll be back next week. But Brian, man, like, anytime you want to do A side, just hit me up and we can set it up. It was great having you.
Would love to, man. Thanks a lot for having me. I really appreciate it. It was a lot of fun. Let's keep doing this. Boom, baby.
There you go. And we'll end on there. Stick around at MMAfighting.com or the YouTube page. We got a whole squad out over in New York for the MSG show on Friday. And then we're going to bare knuckle boxing the week after that. I'm surprised we didn't get any questions about that. Maybe we'll next week. But stick around on MMAfighting.com. Yep. And we'll see you next week.
More to-dos, less time, and an infinite number of tools to keep track of. Sometimes doing business has never felt harder, but you don't need a miracle to hit your goals. You can just use HubSpot because their all-in-one customer platform can make growing your business infinitely easier. Imagine this: high-quality leads, fast closing deals, wildly happy customers, and more benchmark-breaking quarters. It's not a miracle. It's HubSpot. Visit HubSpot.com to get started today.